Blog Talk Radio.
February 6, 2012. I am Tom Riedel, your host, and today on the show we will be having a guest show host here, and his name is Brian Anderson. He was on last week's show with his book, The Godling Chronicles, and we welcome Brian to the show. He'll be filling in for Robin, who will be taking tonight off. And as we do at this time, let me tell you about the Writer's Lounge. The Writer's Lounge blog can be found over at tomriedel.com/blog. Once you get over there, you'll find that there's a lot of reviews of a lot of first-time authors' books. And also over there in the blog in the upper right-hand corner, if you would like to listen to today's show and listen to the guest of today's show and his book, you can listen to the show right there in the Blog Talk Radio player, right in the upper right-hand corner of that page. Also, of course, we have a Facebook link on the Blog Talk Radio site, and you can also contact us at twl11@yahoo.com. We're getting a lot of emails in from people who want to be on the show, authors who have just written their books, and we are asking for patience as we're getting ready very soon here to open up some shows for those authors, and that should be coming up fairly shortly, probably within the next show, which will be on February 20th. And then on that show, we will be bringing in Scott, and his last name is A-N-Q. I don't even know if I can even pronounce that name, but his book, Original Sin, will be on at that point in time. And sometime at that point, or a little after, we will be opening up those shows. So stay tuned and keep sending us your emails. I really appreciate that. And, you know, don't give up on us, because we are looking out for you people out there writing books, just like our guest co-host today, Brian Anderson. And also, before we introduce Brian here, the caller instructions for today's show, once we have on, and who we're going to have on today, is Brett Williams, and he wrote The Dancer at Brockton Inn. He'll be on about quarter after the hour, so stay tuned for him. And now I would like to introduce my guest co-host, Brian Anderson, to the Writer's Lounge. Brian, welcome again to the Writer's Lounge.
Oh, I'm so thrilled to be here. It just seemed like last week I was here.
It seemed that way, didn't it? So what'd you think of that? What'd you think of that Super Bowl game?
Oh my God, that was something else. That was something else. And it, you know, I'm a Saints fan, but being that I live in New York, had to be rooting for the Giants. And you know, I mean, that's, you know, just goes to show you, any given Sunday, you know, I mean, they were just so focused. That was a wonderful game. I'm glad I got to see it.
It was. I really appreciated that last one of those last plays where the Giant player actually sat down in the end zone, didn't even want to score a touchdown. I thought that was absolutely bizarre. I've never seen anything like it in my life. He didn't want a touchdown.
They were trying to run out the clock.
Yeah, it was almost like he was sitting down on the toilet, like he wasn't sure he wanted to sit down on the toilet, but he just dropped himself down into the end zone, and there they had it. They had a touchdown with too much time in the clock, is what you're saying, yes. So that was a lot of fun.
Tom Brady back there.
Exactly. Well, Brian, what do you got for us today for writers' topics?
Well, you know, I was thinking about, I just recently guest blogged on David Clemens' site about book sales. And I covered it a little bit when I was guest on your show last week. And, you know, I've been thinking a lot about how independent authors and people like that are out to get agents, out to get people to promote them. And the problem with it is, unless you're with them, you know, it's hard to get an agent unless you're with a major publisher, and hard to get a major publisher unless you're with an agent. So it's kind of left up to you to do your own self-promotion. And the problem with a artist, a writer doing this, is that they love their book. They love it. They put their heart and soul into it. They put, you know, all this time and effort of writing it, rewriting it, rewriting it again, then getting it edited and proofread, and then either marketing it to the small press or you know, forking out the money to publish it themselves, however they did it. And then they got to look at this thing they love so much like something they don't love, like a product, like just a commodity. And that's why, even though that's really hard for an author to do, it's something they have to do. I mean, do you find that yourself, that when you're trying to market your own books, that you have a hard time separating it?
Oh, absolutely. It's a lot like a baby that you are getting ready to send out into the world before you make that step to a publisher. In my case, it was self-publishing through Lulu.com. And I have not really had a lot of success in selling because I haven't really had a lot of time to get out there and market. I'm doing all these other things like blog talk radio shows, so I really haven't had the time. But you make a good point there that, you know, you really have to be ingenious about how you're going to market your book. There's all kinds of ways to do it, like Brian said, you know, just get out there. You know, set up a stand or go and see if maybe even a mall, Brian, would be a good place to go. You
absolutely.
Know, if you could
anybody
get somebody in a mall.
Anywhere with foot traffic. Go out in front of your house. You think I'm kidding. Get you a table. Go out in front of your house. If you live in a residential neighborhood.
Well, I live in a mobile home park. But yeah, I suppose you can. And, you know, it's good for the ego, too. Once you get those first four or five books sold, you're on a roll.
That's great.
You're on a roll. And once you start getting feedback from the people who buy your books, then it makes it even that much more easier, and you feel a lot more confident getting out there.
Well, what you'd be surprised to see is one thing I found is that when I'm with, you know, dealing with local, like where I'm from in Spanish Fort and Baldwin County, even Mobile, that they're more than happy to put your name out there. Here in Staten Island, you know, I mean, I've lived here for 12 years. My son was born and raised here. That they're happy to put that name out there because it speaks for the community. So, but you got to go out there and be able to hustle it and be able to do that footwork. And a lot of people, you know, they have a hard time finding the time. But, like, for example, I'm going to be on Staten Island Cable Access on a talk show, you know, but I wouldn't be on that if I didn't. I actually went up to the place, couldn't get anybody. I called them like 5, 6, 7 times and finally got through to somebody and got that done. I mean, just any way you can think of, you know, everything is positive. So
absolutely. And you never know when somebody like, well, I'm just going out on a limb here, but you never know when somebody like Oprah Winfrey is going to pick up that book and read it. And then before you know it, you're on her show and your sales are going through the roof. It happened to James Fry. So, you know, I mean, you have to get it out there. You have to get it out there any way you possibly can. And those are really, really good points. Brian, I've got a subject matter here that I'd like to talk about. It kind of gears into what we talked about last week regarding Kids Corner, which we're going to have hopefully on the program here in the short time span here, probably within the next couple months. And I want you all to stay tuned for more details on the Kids Corner. Basically, we're going to have kids on, or we're going to have kids stories submitted, and then we're going to vote on the story that wins, and then, of course, we'll have the author of that story on to read, and if they're too shy, of course, we can always read for them, but it's going to be a great segment. I'm looking forward to it, and what I'd like to do right now is, in line with that, I want to quote something from a guy by the name of Carl Sagan. I think you all know him and remember him as being an astronomer. I can't even talk today. But he talks about books. He talks about books, and I found something online today that was so good I actually had to print it out and frame it. So it's now sitting in a frame in my office here. And I'm going to read what he said. And Carl died, I believe, in 1996. So it was a while back. But here's what he said about books. What an astonishing thing a book is. It's a flat object made from a tree with flexible parts in which are imprinted lots of funny dark squiggles. But one glance at it and you're inside the mind of another person, maybe somebody dead for thousands of years. Across the millennia, an author is speaking clearly and silently in your head directly to you. Writing is perhaps the greatest of human inventions, binding together people who never knew each other, citizens of distant epochs. Books break the shackles of time. A book is proof that humans are capable of working magic. So there you go, and I thought that was spectacular.
And that was an excellent quote.
It was. And with that, what I'd like to do now is to talk a little bit about a lady. Her name is Luann Reich. She's an author of 29 novels. Share some of the methods of writing that have made her such a successful writer. And she talks about children and what, you know, helped her as a child when she was growing up. And there's a clip here. It's about 3 minutes and 38 seconds long. And after that is done, we will bring on our guest author, who is Brett Williams, the dancer at Brockton Inn. We'll be on shortly after that. So here's a clip from Luann Reich.
When I were young, our mother was in grad school to be a teacher, and every summer morning she would turn our dining room at the beach into a classroom, and we were her guinea pigs as she taught techniques in writing. We would circle around the table, and she'd pass up pens and paper, and she'd ask us to write 3 sentences about something fun we'd done the day before. Those summer mornings really did something amazing for me, which was they taught me to think like a writer and to get into the habit of writing every day, needing to write. So I thought I would pass on the writing workshop that my mother did for my sisters and me and share a little bit about it with you. First, as Steve Martin says in Roxanne of Cyrano, first, you need a really great pen. And I completely agree with that. My favorite is this sort of ballpoint gel type pen. I like 2 different kinds of notebooks. I love the moleskin, which reportedly was used by Hemingway, and it's a really handy size to stick in your back pocket and carry it around town. In this kind of notebook, I just will write references that may or may not make any sense to me later. For example, the Angel of the Waters. They run a theater. Greedy landlord. Ongoing Tales of Zoe. Since I wrote these so long ago, I don't exactly remember what I was going for, but they're in there, and it's kind of like having them in my unconscious. All of that might add up to something, or maybe it won't. But I'll never know till I start the next phase, which is the legal pad. So once you have the right pen and the right legal pad and the Moleskine notebook full of shreds of ideas, something kind of gathers force and comes together. It's huge and combustible, and it's the beginning of a short story or your novel. You have to really focus in on the simple beginning. And for me, that's the main character. And when I know a lot about her, when I know where she was born and who she loves and what her heartbreak is and, you know, what her dreams and goals are, not in a resume way, but just in a sort of skin way. And then I give her a name, and then the story is ready to start being written. To all of you out there, I'd say, think of a character, make her not far from your own age and experience, give her a name, and ask her what she wants to do. And pretty soon you'll have a paragraph and you'll have a page, and then you won't be able to stop writing.
Okay, and that's once again kind of a segue into our Kids Corner, giving all you children out there an idea of what you can do to develop your characters and develop your characters, which leads to a story. It's a lot of fun to sit down and start a story. Sometimes you don't even need anything in mind. You just got to come up with a picture of a person or see somebody on the street, and all of a sudden, like magic, the story starts to flow into that person. You start adding details, and before you know it, it's a whole new world out there. So I encourage all you children out there to go ahead and pick up that pen, like she indicated there, and get to work on your stories. And we will be taking some of those submissions here shortly, and we'll let you know when it happens on our Facebook page. And also, if you would like, you can send us the entries there if you want to send us some stories through the email at twl11@yahoo.com. We'd really appreciate it. Now I'd like to introduce or start the segment. The book, The Dancer at Brockton Inn, was written by Brett Williams and published by Hellfire Publishing in 2011. You may purchase it at amazon.com/Kindle, and you can visit the author at brettwilliamsfiction.com. Rumors spread by whores spoke of a woman, a whore much like themselves. These tales spoke of a woman with the strength of three men, killing in the night and disappearing with the moon. Tales of a thief stealing from kings. A woman so beautiful no man could resist her, so exotic no man could possess her for long. The tale spoke of a woman whose passion burned hotter than the pits of Damascus, whose loyalty held stronger than the gates of Gideon. This woman, promised to rumors, banished an exquisite dagger, a dagger encrusted with the image of a serpent, having rubies for eyes. Now Kalana, having discovered such a dagger, must decide to fight and ultimately flee the only life she's ever known, or remain an object to be purchased by men, night after night. Either choice will begin with a dance and end with pain. Kalana, a victim and practitioner of the world's oldest profession, is tired of being probed and prodded by men. The lowest scourges of society take advantage of her night after night, and Kalana's spirit spirals forever down into deeper despair. Her master's profits are high, gleaned from the defiled bed of Kalana, but the woman known as the Dancer of Brockton Inn has quickly launched a plan of escape from the life of ill repute and steals away into a new life where she earns respect at the point of a dagger. Danger and death threatens as she ventures out on a search for a new life. This very short and engaging story is filled with detail that will capture imagination, sending you back to a time of kings who valued their coins when hurried horses flew through the countryside. As men pursued women for devious desires, women like Kalana braved an ancient world to find out more of life. The author took this short story and injected it with action, adventure, and suspense. Above all, he makes you care very much for the main character in the story and the plight that she has to endure. Brett Williams writes fast-paced, nail-biting fiction. His stories usually consist of sex, violence, murder, and mayhem. And now with that, I'd like to welcome Brett to the Writer's Lounge. Good evening, sir, and let's bring you on the air right now. Brett, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Nice to meet you, and nice to have you on tonight. And say hello to Brian, who's sitting out there in New Jersey, right, Brian?
Hi, Brian. Staten Island, but close enough. Hey, Brett, how you doing? Glad to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, Brett, what I'd like you to do, if you could you read an excerpt from The Dancer at Brockton Inn?
Sure. This section starts right after she's noticed the dagger, found the dagger, and so she's basically faced with an option here. And I'll go ahead and start. Don't resist me, wench. I paid good coin for you. With a yank, he pulled away the sheet, uncovering her body. The wretch prodded himself against her as he tried delving a finger between her legs. She'd been conditioned to respond accordingly. She'd done it thousands of times. But tonight she could not. Not with the glinting serpent's eyes of destiny staring her in the face. No, she said. What? Kaylana couldn't believe her defiant word. It shocked her wide awake. Perspiration dotting her back turned to ice and slid down her skin. She shivered. You'll do as I say. Instinctively, Kaylana began to rise from bed to get away. The dignitary grabbed hold of her long hair and pulled her back. I'll have my way. Nobody tells me no, especially any whore. He slapped her across the face. Her head snapped sideways and she tasted blood. She'd always complied, never spoken back. A hatred for this man swelled within her. The things I'll do to you will make DeMarcus himself take pity on your soul. No, her eyes narrowed, causing tears to spill. She climbed off the bed, dragging her by the hair. You'll be praising my prowess while begging for mercy before I'm finished with you. You'll not be able to accept another man for a week, he promised. Kaylana wheeled on him, fast as a cat. She scratched bloody furrows across his face. He cried out in pain and let loose her hair. She sprang toward the open window. As she reached the window, he caught her wrist and jerked her to a stop. This time, as she rolled around, his fist smashed into her face and sent her sailing across the room, bumping into the chair and knocking it over. She landed hard, mashing her breast flat against the floor and skidded to a stop. The bulk of his coins and the dagger ground into her flesh beneath her. Suddenly, her lip felt puffy and numb. I'm going to enjoy this, he chided. Kaylana would never give him the pleasure. With a metallic ring, she drew the weapon from its ornamental sheath and leapt to her feet. Never. Drop that dagger now, whore, or I shall see you dead, he said, coming at her in a naked, drunken stupor. She met him halfway, jabbing the dagger into his gut. She buried it to the hilt as he cried in agony. Warm blood poured over her hands. It spilled onto the floor. Her fingers grew slippery, and she grabbed on with both hands, pulling the blade up, slicing into him as he fell against her, nearly pushing her to the floor. With bubbling gurgle, he cried, screaming for help. In the still of the night, Kaylana feared someone might come to investigate. Her heart began to pound like a war drum. She pulled the blade free as he fell to his knees, clutching his belly. Never again, she said. She drew the blade deeply across his neck. The dignitary collapsed to the floor in a spurting pile. Kaylana took a deep breath of the cool night air. Her chest heaved. Perhaps coincidence, perhaps not. Her body surged with momentum. The dagger fit so naturally in the palm of her hand. Curtains fluttered and a breeze swept across her skin. A sense of empowerment and freedom overcame her. But she hadn't quite finished. She severed the man's penis and flung it across the room. It quickly blotted her hands dry on the sheets. From the other side of the door down the hall came heavy footsteps. She chanced enough time to pluck the coin purse from the man's belt as well as her own from the nightstand. Kaylana was out the window as she heard the doorknob rattle behind her. She escaped onto the roof and into the night.
Wow, that's, Brett, that's very graphic and very good with detail. And when I read that, I felt like I was, well, I was right there. It was very well written. As a male author, you know, you seem to have captured the actual essence of a woman in Glenna's position. What sort of research did you have to do to capture your main character's soul?
Well, I read a lot of fantasy when I was younger, and that's where I got most of inspiration for that type of story.
Okay. Did you do any research as in interviewing anybody, like any prostitutes or anybody like that, that might have been in a situation where they're being overpowered by a man?
Well, I wouldn't say that I interviewed anyone, but I do have some experience with friends and acquaintances that have been in bad situations, and so I probably subconsciously pulled some of that from there.
You did a good job. Brian, you got any questions?
Yeah, I mean, I did. Yeah, it's a pretty short story. I was thinking maybe have you any plans to expand on it or maybe turn it into a longer novel?
Yeah, when I initially wrote it, the plan was to do a series of small stories that all kind of tied together, you know, in a linear fashion. But at this point, I haven't actually wrote any of the other stories.
And your own thoughts on prostitution, did that impact the story? Your own personal, you know, feelings about that, did that help you, you know, develop your character in the story?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I like to probably, in my mind, I play devil's advocate a lot, and so I will more likely write a story based on something that I don't necessarily be my something that I know, you know, have a personal feeling on. You know, it can go in a direction where it is something that I'm very pro or con against, but more often I just like to take an extreme view of something.
And sometimes writing the extreme is good because it does impact the reader the greatest if you you know, expand on the extreme. And I think you did that with that section of reading there. Yeah, I would like to say that if anybody out there is listening in to Brett here on the Writer's Lounge, and if you would like to give us a call, you can do that at 623-213-5613, or you can call toll-free at 877-878-1436. Any questions or comments to Brett would be much appreciated. And Brett, I'm interested in your main character, the Kalana there. When developing a character, a lot of us writers do this, but when developing the character Kalana, did she control you and tell you where she wanted to go and what she wanted to do, or did you as a writer have more control over her?
Well, I would say that she probably had more control over me, and most of my characters tend to do that.
Okay. So how does that work? Here's an example. For instance, in that scene that you just read, what was she in control of that scene more, or were you?
Well, yeah, like for example, I mean, I know that she's so frustrated by the situation that she's in and the her intense feelings against this man. And are you getting feedback on your end? I'm getting it on my end.
Okay, I am not. I'm hearing you playing.
Okay, great. Basically, like, for example, whenever she severs his penis, that is something that the character decides to do.
Okay.
And
yeah,
so,
I gave me chills, man.
Well, it actually did happen in the news story here several years ago now. Was it Lorena Bobbitt, I believe?
Lorena Bobbitt, yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Of course, not with a dagger, though.
Oh. I'm sure it hurt just as much.
Oh, my goodness. Tell me, man, you spend a lot of time on, like, social media, and if so, has it affected you as a writer, or, you know, has it enabled you as a writer, or to market your book, to continue on with writing?
Well, yeah, I do spend some time. I haven't really sit and thought about the time frame that I spend on it, but probably more than I should, and yes, it does help. I mean, basically, whenever I first started, I was writing manuscripts, and I had no clue on anything. And then I started getting online and getting into some forums and stuff. And that's, I mean, networking is so important as far as not only promoting yourself, but finding out where to submit things and finding out what other people are doing. It's just so important and such a good resource.
How long have you been on Facebook? I'm just curious, Brett.
On Facebook, I'm not really sure. Probably 2.5 years or so.
Okay. Have you got a lot of response from your friends on Facebook as far as your writing? Do they comment, or, you know, like with me, I'll post a link and I don't hear anything from them for a long time, and then all of a sudden I'll start getting comments. And it almost goes like, you know, once you get it rolling, you get two or three people commenting, then you get a whole flood of people coming in. Are you experiencing that at all on either Facebook? You also Twitter, too, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, I don't use Twitter as much as I used to. Facebook is a little more important. But when I started out, I got into some forums that have collectors in them. And actually, the first book I put out was a self-published book that mostly just sold to collectors.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I found out about different small press publishers, and I actually got one of my short stories was accepted by one of the small press publishers, which they're also going to reprint that short story that's called The Rot, and it'll be coming out soon in American Horror Stories Volume 1 from Delirium Books. And that's supposed to be out in a month or so.
Cool. Hey, there.
What about writers of other similar genres? Do you have a lot of contact with writers that write similar style stories than you, or do you sort of remain pretty autonomous that way?
Well, no, I think I do network with a lot of writers that do similar type things, and I'm in a lot of different genres right now with being an emerging writer. I tend to write things that are dark, so it kind of crosses over into like horror or sort of like erotic horror. I've got another short story which was out in the Halloween issue of Erotica Quarterly. And
I'm
off.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
You know, as far as, you know, your experience in publishing here, what advice would you give to other first-time authors that are out there thinking about publishing their book?
Well, I mean, reading a lot helps, and just continue to write and hone your craft. I think anyone who writes is always growing and improving, and so those are probably two of the most important. And then, of course, the social media networking has to play in after you've got some product available or some, you know, potential product available.
I may have missed you when you were talking earlier, but did you say you had an agent? Did you ever have an agent?
No, I don't have an agent. I've never had one. That'd be nice.
Yeah. Agents aren't always what they're cracked up to be. They sometimes control the writer, and they might keep you on hold for a long period of time when sometimes if you're, and I know this from experience, but if you really want your work out there and you have an agent that's extremely busy with other clients, you're kind of sitting forever, and sometimes it's best just to get out there and self-publish your book. From the authors that I've talked to on the show, I found that a lot of them like to do that and develop an audience through their self-publishing. And then, believe it or not, after you self-publish and you have an audience, that's when the agents usually contact you. So, anyways, that's my take on it. I don't know, Brian, do you have any?
You mentioned that you read, that reading is an important part of your writing. Do you have any favorite authors or some people that, you know, considering you do write erotica and real dark stuff that may surprise people that you read? Like for myself, I like to read historical documentaries and things like that, but I also like to read, you know, all sorts of different types of books. And I was wondering, for you, do you find yourself reading similar genres, or do you read into, like, a lot of different things?
Well, I try to read a lot of different things, and my favorite writer is Richard Layman, and he is just so much fun. I mean, most of his books are, I guess, in the horror or suspense genre, but he, as an early writer, he wrote some romance novels, and so in one of my earlier manuscripts, I basically learned that when you're writing something other than horror, I mean, when you're writing horror, you know the vampires are bad and scary, but whenever you're reading something else or writing something else, anything, it can come at you from any angle and be any person. And so I set out to write a very fast-paced, non-supernatural book that had a developing relationship. I won't go so far as to call it a romance novel, but a relationship aspect is the very important thing to it. And there's a lot of crazy stuff going on. And, I mean, you don't know what angle it's coming from because it's not the big scary monster that's out there. And I mean...
Anything could be the big scary monster.
Yeah.
I've still got them in my life.
You know what? It's great to hear that because, you know, I mean, you know, so many people get locked down into their own genre of, you know, they start reading what the kind of same genre that they write without sort of exploring. It's good to hear, you know, but it's good for the listeners to hear that it's good to do that.
Yeah, and going back
to the genre that help your own, you know.
Yeah, going back to what you were saying about the agents, and I think it kind of depends on what genre you do write in, because I've seen people on Facebook, and I kind of know people that write horror, and they basically get shunned by agents, but then I work with a guy who, as far as I'm aware, hasn't really published anything, but he had a partially finished young adult fantasy novel, kind of like a Harry Potter type novel, and he like already had an agent. So I don't even know how that happened, but so it's different depending on what you write.
Yeah, a lot of times it happens. Hey, I'm really curious about Brett Williams, as far as, you know, the novel that you wrote is very short. It was a very short story. I'd like to know, where do you go when you write, and how long did it take you to write from the first draft to the last on that particular story?
Well, on that particular one, I think it took me about 6 weeks or so to write the initial story. And when I say 6 weeks, that one was not a start-to-finish one. I was in a mode, and I'm still in the mode where I write for a while and I jump to another story when I kind of get stuck.
Where do you go when you write, Brett? Where do you sit down to write? Can you do it anywhere, or do you need a special place to go?
Well, I mean, I typically just write at home. I've wrote at coffee shops some, but I ride in the morning, which I know a lot of riders tend to do it at nighttime. I'll like kind of be half asleep and half awake, and I'll be daydreaming on my story. And when I wake up, I got like a scene in mind, and so that's when I tend to do it.
Uh-huh. Very good. Hey, everybody out there, once again, if you'd like to call the show, go ahead. I know we had a caller in here, and then they popped out. They were in here, so. You know, be patient. Stay in the line. We'll get to you. If you want to call back in, I believe it was from your area code, Brett. It was 913 that came in. So if you want to call us at 626-213-5613 or toll free at 877-878-1436. I'm sure Brett would appreciate you calling in with any questions or comments that you have. So, yes, Brett, how did you get started as a kid? I mean, what was your goals and dreams as a kid? Did you want to be a writer when you were a child?
Well, that's funny. Actually, the first book I wrote was when I was about sixth grade or something, and it's on Facebook in image form, and it was in a class assignment, and it kind of sucked. I had to do homework, and I was sitting there, everyone was watching TV, and I was writing a story, and then I started to get into it and say, hey, this was all right, and I kind of had that in my mind for a while, but mainly I was a reader, and I guess every time I would read a book, I would wish that I could do that, and then I started doing it.
Very good. What did you want to be when you grew up?
That's young.
Well, I wanted to be a lot of different things at different ages. At one point, I wanted to be a stuntman. I thought that'd be cool, but that was short-lived.
Right, stuntman, yes.
Brian, you got anything for Brett?
I was wondering, you going back to where you said that, you know, you like to write in the morning and things like that. Do you carry a notebook with you or anything like that, or do you just pretty much sit down at the laptop and do it that way? Do you take notes, or do you sort of, internalize it until you're ready to sit down and actually write?
Yeah, I pretty much internalize. I'm not any good with a notepad. I'm better with a keyboard, and even with taking notes. My notes are very brief, and they'll be at the end of the Word file I'm doing. But, because, sometimes I'll have someone read it, and they'll be like, I'm like, what do you think of this chapter? And they'll read it, and they'll be like, what's this crap at the end? And I'm like, oh, that's my notes for later in the story.
Do you find yourself having to go back a lot? Because I know myself, if I decide to change something, I won't change it right away. I'll keep writing and then go back, later to remove the hole in the story. Or do you stop right where you're at, fix it, and, to eliminate too many drafts? Or?
Well, I have a pretty good memory, and I'll make like a mental note to go back, and I'll just keep that in my mind until I actually go through it. But one thing that I like to do is each day that I write, I'll go back and kind of edit the section I did the day before. So a lot of times I can fix them then.
Cool. We were talking about research a little earlier. Did you have to research the time period that Kalyana lived in your story?
No, I saw it as more of a fantasy world and basically just kind of created my own fantasy world somewhat based off of fantasy novels I read whenever I was a kid.
So it was all out of your head then, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's incredible. That's incredible. I could never do that. I'd have to be in the Wikipedia probably, 8 hours of a day to come up with a story like that.
Well, I do that, but I can't recall any specific doing that for that story.
Yeah.
I know I had to look up fabrics.
Fabrics.
That's one thing
everything can't be made out of wool.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess in your story, Brian, you would have to do that, right?
Yeah, I had to look up some fabrics. It had to be wool and linen was all I knew off the top of my head. So,
yeah, well, that's all they wore back then, isn't it?
That's mostly what it was. It was wool, linen, and hemp, believe it or not, and when they started trading in Egyptian cotton.
And a lot of scratching going on, too, I imagine.
Oh, my God, can you imagine?
Yeah.
Wearing a wool outfit in the summer.
Brett, excuse me, what do you do for fun? I kind of took a peek at your Facebook page, and it you can tell everybody what you do for fun. I know one thing that we have in common that we do a lot of. Can you tell us?
Well, I read books and I play Xbox.
There you go. That's what I was looking for.
I was playing The Elder Scrolls about 20 minutes ago. Or 20 minutes before the show.
So what's your plans for the next book? When do you expect that to come out?
Well, I'm not sure exactly when, but I do have a novella, so it's a little bit longer than this one. It's called Betty McGee, Wooed, Screwed, and Tattooed, which is
okay.
Supposed to be coming out from Hellfire Press in May. That's my longer story. Like I said, American Horror Stories Volume 1 is supposed to be coming out from Delirium first quarter this year. Finishing up a manuscript right now, but I have no idea when that's going to, you know, what'll happen with that. But that's a full novel length, so.
Very good.
It sounds like you're really busy.
There was one other one that I was going to mention from Hellfire Press. It's an anthology called Wooden Stakes and Silver Bullets, and it's a paranormal romance that I have a story.
Oh, I like that name. I like that title a lot.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, yeah, the book cover looks pretty slick.
Yeah, you get a good excuse me, you get a good title in there and you get a good cover on a book. And believe me, a lot of people talk about this a lot lately. I've been reading some articles about titles and book covers, and they say that if you have a good one, you're going to pull people in right away just from the book cover and the title itself. They'll be coming in to read your book.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember where it was. I think it might have been on Lulu.com where they had like a supposedly a book title calculator, and you plugged in the title, and it told you how well it was going to do.
Oh, very good. Cool.
I don't know how they figure that out, but...
Yeah. Any other subjects that you'd like to touch on as a writer or subject matter from your book?
No, I mean, not really as far as the book goes. I mean, you kind of touched on the prostitution, which was the main thing in that particular story. But, like, for the upcoming, the Betty McGee story is, I think, kind of interesting because the main character, Betty McGee, is the product of neglect, I guess you could call it, and abuse. And so it sort of touches on some issues without really taking too much of a stance on them.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody you'd like to shout out to?
I'd just like to shout out to the people who have read my stuff and the people who follow me on Facebook, and I do appreciate you guys for having me on here. And I mean, Hellfire Publishing, and really any publishers that are good at working with their writers. I mean, Delirium is great. I mean, any of these places that will reply to emails in a timely fashion has got my kudos.
Very good. And where can listeners find you on the web, Brett?
Well, you can find me at brettwilliamsfiction.com. There's links off of there to Facebook. Those are the two main places. I do hang out at this one forum called The Crypt, but Facebook is probably the best place.
Okay, very good. And once again, we'd like to thank you for being on the Writer's Lounge. Once again, it's The Dancer at Brockton Inn. Everybody, go out there and grab that book in your Amazon or digital form, and I'm sure you will enjoy it. It was a very quick read, but I was very impressed with how it pulled me in. So more than likely, you're going to give yourself, I'd say probably an hour and a half to read the book, and it won't let you put it down. It was that good for me, and I could not put it down. So thank you again, Brett, for coming on the Writer's Lounge, and we wish you lots of success with your future books, and maybe we'll see you again here on this program.
Well, thanks very much, Tom and Brian. Thanks for having me.
Okay.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, bye-bye, Brett.
Bye-bye.
Okay there, Brian, and as my voice is starting to go south, I've been battling with a cough for the last several months, and now I've got a cold on top of it, so I'm kind of struggling.
You got
them
in Minnesota, though.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I was going to start off the program and talk to Robin, and I hope everything's okay with her, and I hope she'll be back in the next program, but I was going to just mention that I had gone fishing up in Mille Lacs Lake here in northern Minnesota back at the beginning of the week, last week, and I didn't catch a tree.
Up on there. It was a good looking fish.
I didn't catch we're talking about a three-eyed fish, you know, something for a good story. Well, I do have a good fish story, and I ended up with a trophy fish, 28-inch walleye, and it came to me at 2:30 in the morning as my bell on my bed, believe it or not, was ringing, and I had to jump up and pull that sucker up with the help of my buddy Patrick. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And I hope to get up there again, and maybe we'll catch some more fish in the future. But I had no clue that that was a trophy fish. My friend Patrick said that people spend a lifetime trying to catch a 28-inch walleye. So there you go.
Oh, wow. That's a big fish. I don't care what kind of fish it is.
Yeah.
Back home, we have a lot of blackwater creeks. And every summer when I was a kid, I'd go fishing. It's called Cedar Creek in Alabama for the week, you know, with my best friend. We used to have a fish fry at the end of the week, mostly bass and brim and stuff like that. But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And to be able to sit there in an ice house, watch TV, drink a few beers, listen to XM satellite radio, eat beef jerky, and just have a great time. We even had a camera down the hole to watch the bait jumping up and down for 8 hours before we caught that fish. So that was a lot of fun. It felt like you were on another planet, actually. But if you haven't done it, it's a hell of a good time.
I've never been ice fishing. I'd like to go any kind of fishing. I like freshwater fishing of any kind. You know, I enjoy deep sea fishing.
Yep.
But there's nothing more relaxing than being out on the lake. You know, just the calm. It's just wonderful, especially living in the city.
Absolutely. Well, Brian, I think we're going to end it up here. We got about 7 minutes left. We'll play our closing song. But I want to thank you for being on and guest hosting. And once again, hopefully, we'll have Robin back here in the next show, which will be on February 20th. And again, let me pull my notes out here. We will be having an author on, and his name is Scott. And I'm not even going to try to pronounce the pronunciation of the last name, but it's A-N-Q, and the book is Original Sin. So that's coming on February 20th. And we hope you all tune in for that. Once again, please stop over to the Facebook page and like us. Our like numbers are going up. I know Brian likes to get over there and do a little bit of liking himself on the posts that we post. And and we're also going to be working, Brian, with Kids Corner. So stay tuned for that in the near future. And Brian and the rest of us here at the Writer's Lounge will keep you in tune to what's going on there. So any closing thoughts, Brian?
You know, just, you know, all the writers out there keep writing, and all the readers keep reading. You know, it's the best thing in the world.
Yep. And as I say, good reading and good writing, and we'll see you next time on the Writer's Lounge.
You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. One beautiful morn, he said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. And it looks like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun begins.